Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading this morning from Canto 1, Chapter 12, Text Number 12. Tata Sarva Guno Darke Sanu Kuda Grahodaye Jagye Vangsha Dara Pandur Bhuya Pandur Ivao Jasa Tatak Sarva Guno Darke Sanukuda Grahodaye Jagye Vangsha Dara Pandur Bhoya Pandur Ivao Jasa. Translation: thereupon, when all the good signs of the zodiac gradually evolved, the heir apparent of Pandu, who would be exactly like him in prowess, took birth. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Astronomical calculations of stellar influences upon a living being are not superstitions, but are factual as confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam. Every living being is controlled by the laws of nature at every minute, just as a citizen is controlled by the influence of the state. The state laws are grossly observed, but the laws of material nature, being subtle to our gross understanding, cannot be experienced grossly. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 3:9, every action of life produces another reaction, which is binding upon us, and only those who are acting on behalf of Yajna, Vishnu, are not bound by reactions. Our actions are judged by the higher authorities, the agents of the Lord, and thus we are awarded bodies according to our activities. The law of nature is so subtle that every part of our body is influenced by the respective stars, and a living being obtains his working body to fulfill his terms of imprisonment. By the manipulation of such astronomical influence, a man's destiny is therefore ascertained by the birth time constellation of stars, and a factual horoscope is made by a learned astrologer. It is a great science, and misuse of a science does not make it useless. Maharaj Parikshit, or even the personality of Godhead, appear in certain constellations of good stars, and thus the influence is exerted upon the body born at an auspicious moment. The most auspicious constellation of stars takes place during the appearance of the Lord in this material world, and it is specifically called Jayanti, a word not to be abused for any other purposes. There's a subtext there. Maharaj Parikshit was not only a great Kshatriya emperor, but also a great devotee of the Lord. Thus, he cannot take his birth at any inauspicious moment, as a proper place and time is selected to receive a respectable personage, so also to receive such a personality as Maharaj Parikshit, who was especially cared for by the Supreme Lord. A suitable moment is chosen when all good stars assemble together to exert their influence upon the king. Thus, he took his birth just to be known as the great hero of Srimad Bhagavatam. This suitable arrangement of astral influences is never a creation of man's will, but it is an arrangement of the superior management of the agents of the Supreme Lord. Of course, the arrangement is made according to the good or bad deeds of the living being. Herein, the importance of pious acts performed by the living being, herein lies the importance of pious acts performed by the living being. Only by pious acts can one be allowed to get good wealth, good education, and beautiful features. The sangskaras of the school of Sanatana Dharma, man's eternal engagement, are highly suitable for creating an atmosphere for taking advantage of good stellar influences. And therefore, Garbhadana Sangskara, or the first seedling purificatory process prescribed for the higher castes, is the beginning of all pious acts. To receive a good, pious, and intelligent class of men in human society. Last sentence. There will be peace and prosperity in the world due to good and sane population only. Semicolon. There is hell and disturbance only because of the unwanted, insane populace addicted to sex indulgence. End of purport. Tatak sarva guno darke sanu kula grahodaye jagye vanshadhara pandor bhuya pandur ivaujasa. Thereupon, when all good signs of the zodiac gradually evolved, the heir apparent of Pandu, who would be exactly like him in prowess, took birth. So first, I'd like to thank and welcome the devotees that came from distant places to participate in the program today. So thank you personally very much. In reflecting on this verse, I thought it would be good to step back and try to get the big picture of Srimad Bhagavatam. So Srimad Bhagavatam is a transcendental literature composed by Vyasadeva under the instruction of Narada Muni, reflecting back on first canto, chapters 4, 5, and 6. Vyasadeva, being Trikalagya, he looked into the future and considered, yikes, the age of Kali is coming and it's so bad. He wanted to do something out of compassion to make it mitigated the influences of the age of Kali. And so since the whole of Vedic culture is for taking the soul ultimately back to Godhead, beyond even moksha or liberation, but in that sense of sayuja mukti, but restoring the fullest of happiness of the living being in their rightful position of eternal service to the personality of Godhead, that's the goal. And there are lots of unwilling persons who, they like it here too much. Too much. And so gradual elevation is also presented for those persons. It's in the verses, the verses that we've been discussing in chapter 17 of Bhagavad Gita. The influence of the modes of nature is very strong. And the living entities are holding on very strongly to their expectations of happiness through fruitive activities. So therefore there's a gradual process, and Vyas compiled the Vedas accordingly. And so we know the description. He felt dissatisfied, even though he compiled it perfectly. Narada informed him, you did compile, it's flawless. What you wrote is not, there's not error within it. But inordinately you've emphasized this without sufficient emphasis upon direct glorification of the personality of Godhead and corresponding engagements in life. So Bhagavad Dharma was absent and instructed him to compile such literature. And so he did. And starting with chapters 7 and 8, where we hear such nice glorification of the Pandavas and how the Pandavas had love for Krishna. And with that love for Krishna, the association of Krishna, the interaction of Krishna, and eventually when Krishna left, Maharaj Yudhisthira crowned King Parikshit as the successor, and they went to the Himalayas for the purpose of following Krishna and going back to Godhead. So then a question arises. There's the direct process of Bhagavad Dharma, which we know from Bhagavad Gita as well as from practical experience. Manushanam sahasreshu kaschid yatati siddhaya yatatam avisiddhanam kaschid vetimam tadvataha. Persons interested in Bhagavad Dharma are rare. So what about the rest of the populace? Same question as Vyasadeva. So one's not simply interested in their own liberation, but interested in the welfare of all, the broad-minded thinking person. What is to be done that's a benefit for all? Of course, at the time, simply just engaged for us, simply to engage in Bhagavad Dharma, hearing and chanting and describing the topics of Krishna and leading an ideal life within society. It's the greatest service we can do for ourselves and all. But the Bhagavatam, in addition, it may be confusing sometimes. I've been involved in discussions about this confusion. There's a lot of discussion in this first canto and other parts of the Bhagavatam that identify duties according to Varnashram. And our position is Bhagavad Dharma that's beyond Varnashram. Now, what is it? What's the path that we are to follow? And more broadly, what's the path that is the ultimate benefit for all? How can they, just like this question that came up yesterday, of things that may seem to be indirect, to bring people to the direct, or making wet wood into dry wood so it can ignite. So the process of Varnashram is there as the social structure. I've had very lively and enlightening discussions with Shivaram Maharaj on this topic, because he's lived in on a farm, he has created a farm in Hungary, and Hungary, by the way, is historically like the breadbasket of Europe, meaning it produced the food, grains, and abundantly, it has historically, the history of Europe has been, that's the role of Hungary for the rest of Europe, or Eastern Europe. I mean, not that other countries don't produce, but it's like that, there's their special contribution. And so focus historically in Hungary upon sustainable agriculture over, not just burn out the soil, but over generations and decades and centuries. And so sustainable agriculture is a big deal for the people of Hungary and the government of Hungary and the populace. So it's perfect place for the farm that has been created. And then when you have a farm or you have a community, then what's the social structure for those persons that aren't Mahabhagavatas? You know, and so by that intimacy of living together, it has forced them or provided the opportunity for considering very carefully the statements of Srimad Bhagavatam of how to structure themselves as a community according to Varnashram. It's nice. Very nice. And that has given him lots of realization of the relevance, and having discussions with him has been very enlightening for me, because my life has been Bhagavad Dharma, Kijai, hearing and chanting, Brahmachari, sannyas life, hearing and chanting. Off we go, zoom, zoom. And there's another dimension that is within the Bhagavatam, something like visual images, a needle that has a point, and there's a shaft following the point, and there's a flat part where you push, and so the pin can enter into the fabric, or whatever it is that you want to push the pin into. So the point doesn't change. That which enters into society is hearing and chanting. But not everybody is inclined to strong activities of hearing and chanting. Our temple is for hearing and chanting, and we have very nicely organized programs for that. Scriptural study and so on. Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu. That's Bhagavad Dharma. That's our program. And then there's society. And then there's our members who are not such strong sadhakas, but they have some faith in the goal. Remember from our discussions last couple of days about the seed of bhakti is faith in the scriptures that teach how to, and you know, the process of bhakti and the goal of bhakti. And what about persons, exactly as Prabhupada said, that they're not so inclined for chanting, and they're kind of spotty in their attendance at the Bhakti Shastri classes and the other educational programs, but they're attracted to the principle, the goal, and you know, to some degree the process. They're just whatever it is, moted out or lazy or something. So how is their life to be structured? What's the societal arrangement for them? It's Varnashram. So how does one get to the question is, how does one get to the position like, from the earlier chapters, the Pandavas, that by being fixed in remembrance of the personality of Godhead, they went directly back to Godhead. How does one get there from where we are? You know, so just engage people in hearing and chanting. And now what about their social activity? In the wet wood becoming dry wood stage. There's a structure that was within the Bhagavatam. It's, and Krishna gives it. We know from Bhagavad Gita. It's his system. Chaturvarnamayashrishtam guna karma vibhagasha. It's he created it. And as Prabhupada points out, it's everywhere. When I went to Moscow, they say classless society. But in the early morning, going for a morning walk, I saw one woman sweeping the street and another man going in a limousine to the Kremlin. Classless society. And there's natural divisions of society. And then, you know, Professor Katoski, you're the intellectual. And then there's the administrator. And there's the Shudra. And then later the marketplace gets set up and everyone's selling their goods. The Vaishnas. It's there. Because it's Krishna's creation. So how is it to be done in such a way? It's Daivi Varnashram. It's organized so affinity for the personality of Godhead, the attraction for the topics of Krishna, awaken. Because that's the propellant that carries one into transcendence, like we were hearing at the end of chapter 17, Bhagavad Gita. Same message, expressed slightly differently, but same message. Om Tat Sat, the name of Vishnu, or addressing Vishnu, and carrying out one's theistic duties. So there must be, besides the knowledge of what the system is, there must be a leader of the system. That's the king, or kshatriya, is to administrate that for society in general. And so there's ample presentation. I mean, I'm sure you've noticed from reading the first canto of Bhagavatam, a lot of information, a lot of description and glorification of Maharaj Parikshit. And it goes back to Canto 1, Chapter 4, Text Number 9, where Shaunaka is asking Maharaj Parikshit, is asking Suta Goswami, we have heard about the qualities of Maharaj Parikshit. Can you describe more about him? It's just one verse. Now, some further appreciation about the composition of Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam is not linear. It's not like an encyclopedia where you look up a topic and then everything on that topic is under the header and then subtopics. And then you have another topic and everything is there. It's not the composition of the Bhagavatam. It's not linear. It's holistic. So in different places, just limiting for the moment to the first canto of Bhagavatam, the composition comes, the answer to that question, which has to do with, you know, the compassionate message of the Bhagavatam, how to take living entities that are victims of the age of Kali, or subjected to the vices and perils of the age of Kali, to the position of the Pandavas, or to the position of exalted devotees. Big challenge, isn't it? Big challenge. So there's a structure, there's a system for that. The Bhagavatam gives it. Again, primarily hearing and chanting. Very easy. And then there's a social structure that accompanies it. So we hear about the king and the qualities of a king. Part of it is to appreciate he's a great devotee, so we honor him. Krishna selected him to hear Srimad Bhagavatam from Shukadeva Goswami, and the whole, as we heard in this purport, the arrangement was made by Krishna specifically for that. I mean, it's for our benefit, so we can hear Srimad Bhagavatam, what was spoken to Maharaj Parikshit, where he asked perfect questions. And Shukadeva Goswami replied with perfect answers. And hearing those questions and answers imparts unto us perfect knowledge from a perfect person. So we can also become perfect. But there's also Krishna's compassion upon Maharaj Parikshit to take him back to Godhead by so doing. So while present, he's benefiting us because he's compassionate. When he hears, for example, at the end of the fifth canto about the suffering of in the hellish planets, it's just like a cosmology description. But how it strikes his heart is he steps out of his own, you know, comfort zone, his own I'm going to die in 7 days position, and he's thinking not about his imminent death, he's thinking about the well-being of the citizens in general. What can be done to prevent them from having to experience that hellish suffering? Is compassion. The whole of the Bhagavatam is an expression of compassion. And so we hear about the chanting of the holy name. That's the means, the theology of the holy name. And we also hear this other description about the Varnashram, Daivi Varnashram. It's not the point of the pin, it's the shaft of the pin. How does the society organize itself when they begin getting dried from the wet condition or saturated with infectious conditions from the age of Kali, how do we organize ourselves in social structure? It's necessary. Until one becomes liberated, it's necessary, to some degree at least, not in the fastidious degree of those that are not God conscious and find the rules and regulations to be all and all and fastidiously follow them like smarta brahmanas wish to see society overly obsessed with the rules and the regulations. My goodness, in the age of Kali, you're not going to get very far if that's what your religion is. The basis of your religion is follow rules and regulations, and then you can get elevation and then liberation. It's not going to benefit people in a great way because they don't want it. They don't want that regulation. So, the hearing and chanting process is very simple and natural, very suitable. So we're hearing now this position of Maharaj Parikshit. Specifically, 149, the Shonaka asked about his qualities and his birth. So, starting with this verse, chapter 12, verse 12, we're hearing about his birth. Because before this, it's the interaction with the personality of Godhead. It helps us understand, wow, what an exalted personality was Maharaj Parikshit. What a great, great personality. So dear to the personality of Godhead. In part because of his mother's plea, please protect this child in my womb, which is discussed in chapter 8, before the Queen Kunti's prayers, we find that. And then in chapter 15, is the crowning before Maharaj Yudhisthira departs. And then chapter 16, 17 is his glories and his activities. And in this chapter, we're going to hear the predictions by the astrologers of what kind of king he's going to be, which tells us a number of things. It tells us how a responsible parent, in this case Yudhisthira isn't directly his parent, but you know, the king wants to see, is this child going to be capable of managing the kingdom? What's his qualification? And when he hears his qualification, he's very pacified. But part of the qualification comes from, as mentioned in the purport, these sangskaras that are performed. Of course, prior to the samskara is the living entity's activities in his previous life, his guna and karma association, the association with the modes of nature and the prior activity, then determined, as we hear in this purport, a particular body is assigned, a particular mother and father is assigned, and then a particular body with its gifts of capacity for knowledge and so on. But there's this other procedure for the twice born, which is sangskaras. Now, a little bit of appreciation from Sri Brahma Samhita, the verse 47 or 48 of Brahma Samhita that describes Durga. It specifies that she has 10 hands, and in each of the hands there's a weapon. Now, each of the 10 hands, according to Bhaktisiddhanta's purport commentary, it represents the 10 purificatory processes. So normally one thinks of these purificatory processes as very nice, because it brings auspiciousness as the juncture of the movement of the soul from a prior to situation to the next situation. At that juncture, there's something auspicious that's performed. Bhaktisiddhanta makes it clear. these are those 10 arms, and in each of the arms is a weapon. Starts with the trident, the threefold miseries of the living entity, Adiatmika, Adidaivika, and Adibhautika Klesha.
Yeah.
Because before the living entity is implanted in the womb of the mother, the garbha dana, the charity to the garbha, to the womb of the mother, is to make sanctified the womb so that a good soul can take birth there, but then the good soul gets another body and the threefold miseries. So on the one hand, glorious. On the other hand, difficulty. Bhaktisiddhanta speaks like this, that the body that's awarded to the living entity is like a prison uniform. You follow? Because Durga is in charge of the prison house of material nature, and all persons that enter into the prison house of material nature get a prison uniform. That's this thing. Prabhupada once described everyone that has one of these, it's like a flag. You know, flag of the king with a lion or Hanuman or something. It indicates, you know, this is our line. Our flag is embarrassment. I've been rebellious. Here's my flag that says it. I'm rebellious to the will of the Supreme Lord. That's why I got one of these. It's my prison uniform. And we're proud of it. We have a celebration. Happy birthday. And all of that. So, similarly, Prabhupada speaks in the purport about the control of the state is something that you can measure with behaviors or failure to behave, and then one can be dealt with accordingly, protected by the government or admonished by the government. But then there's subtle laws. I like the way he writes this. The state laws are grossly observed, but the laws of material nature, being subtle to our gross understanding, cannot be experienced grossly. But nonetheless, they're operative. And there's somebody in charge of those laws. The laws, and then the law enforcement agency. We know who she is, with her different weapons. Bhaktisiddhanta describes, even if one tries to avoid each of these 10 arms, there's the next one, and ultimately, the lion will get you. There's no escaping these subtle laws. One may, by cleverness, apparently at least, escape the state laws, but there's no escaping these subtle laws. But they can't be experienced grossly because they're subtle laws, but they're inexorable laws, invincible laws of nature. And how do we detect them? Well, one of the ways is described here by stellar influence. People ask this question commonly. If everything is predestined, what's the meaning of free will? You've heard that one before. Yes? The indication is presented in this purport. Rather than finding the exact language which Prabhupada expresses it so nicely, there's influence that's going to act upon the living entity. At the same time, there's the option of free will. Both are operating. One doesn't cancel the other. The fact that by my past activity, I took birth where I took birth, from the parents that I took birth from, and I have a certain whatever it is, quality, you know, set of nature, and intellect capacity, and you know, all janma aishwarya shuchra shribhir, all those things, whatever proportion was due to me by my past activities, there they are. And now my life unfolds. But by good fortune, Bhagyavan Jeev, there was association with a pure devotee, Srila Prabhupada, and his message, and my life changed, as did each of our lives change. Just in the course of being here, devotees have been sharing explicitly how their life has changed since, you know, maybe even a little reluctantly, cautiously, taking the path of devotional service. But lo and behold, their life has changed. As I was sharing last night, this devotee from Brazil, I mean, he's a character, nice devotee, but he's got tattoos everywhere, kind of that kind of person. He experimented with all kinds of stuff, but now he became a devotee. And when he went back to visit his family in Brazil, I mean, they don't know about devotional service, but as I mentioned, they saw, wow, you've changed. Your quality is so gentle, and they didn't elaborate like how they saw it, but it's very clear just from interacting with him over a period of time. He has changed. That nature was there, but it was disturbed by Kali Yuga influences. And now that those Kali Yuga influences have subsided and the strength of bhakti, that's very nice, very attractive, very appealing. So his family members are now taking up devotional service. They're starting to chant. They're reading in Portuguese Bhagavad Gita. And, you know, he's explaining to them things that he learned in his Bhakti Shastri class. And it's really nice, etc. So one's karma can change. The stars don't move around, but the influence that they exert, indicating the tendencies due to one's past karma, are diminished on the strength of bhakti. Say it backwards. Bhakti diminishes that influence of our past guna and karma influences. So guna can change. And karma can change. Although destiny is still there, the stars are still in the sky and exerting their influence. So let's say someone may have a tendency to become angry when such and such happens. So one can have spiritual strength where on that spiritual strength one finds, much to their surprise, that anger subsides. Now maybe some persons it doesn't subside, it still goes on. But by spiritual influence it can just dissipate. I was just a little anecdotal. I was... description of the same thing. I was attending a Bhakti Riksha class somewhere in New Jersey. So in the beginning of the Bhakti Riksha class, one of the common things is sharing. You know, they call it icebreaker. Share something with the group that you experienced that inspired you in Krishna consciousness. So right away there was a man that wanted to, like, he was enthusiastic. He was waving his arm. He wanted to share. So he had the floor right away. And he described a longer version, but a short version is, from my childhood, I appreciated that Bhagavad Gita was a very special teaching. So whenever there was some opportunity in childhood, in my high school, in college, and afterwards, I took part in some Bhagavad Gita study. And very honestly, I never really understood it. I understood it was exalted, but I didn't understand the message. And then I saw this one. Someone said, hey, come on over. And so I said, sure. And I came. And I want to share that I'm now understanding Bhagavad Gita. Unlike over 30 years, I was not understanding Bhagavad Gita. And not only that, it's influencing the quality of my life. Then he gave this example. In my home, anger with my wife, you know, not terrible, but it was there. And then in the workplace, you know, people would be nasty, and I'd go, you know, and blow up. And now, that's not there. It's dissipated. I mean, I never was like really wild, kind of angry, but, and now it's still there to some extent, but I can appreciate this has changed my life. Not only I can understand Bhagavad Gita's message, that's just a sample. So many scriptural examples like that. King Muchukunda said to Krishna, after Krishna appeared in that cave and Muchukunda incinerated Kalyavana, and then he saw Krishna and he didn't know who Krishna was, but he saw that he was effulgent, and so he said, who are you? You, by your effulgence I can understand you must be maybe a demigod or a representative of the kingdom of God, or who are you? Krishna smiled and told him who he was. I'm the son of Vasudev and Devaki, and I've appeared in this world as I do millennium after millennium to annihilate demoniac kings like that pile of ashes over there, Kalyavana. And I've come here in this cave for one reason, because you prayed very sincerely to me for a long time. You very much desired my darshan. So I've come. That's for you. That's all. And Kalyavana and Muchukunda said a whole bunch of verses that are like the Bhaktivinoda Thakur Sharanagati song, the Dainya section. Just humility. Describing, I was such a fool. I was chasing the king carrot. He didn't use that terminology, but chasing the happiness of a king, and described in details what that was like. My life was just filled with that, very powerful, many people worshiping me, many followers, more kingdoms, but no happiness. But I kept going and just completely in foolishness. And then you've come. And I can understand that you've come because of the kindness, the prior association I had with Garga Muni, the astrologer, just like this verse, the astrologer of the Yadu dynasty. He, Muchukunda, was from the Ikshvaku dynasty. And he somehow had some association with Garga. Garga, reading his chart, said, oh, you're going to see the personality of Godhead face to face. Wow, really? Is that what the chart says? Just how will I recognize him? So Garga Muni described him. So that entered his heart. And so he was praying, Krishna! He had never seen him. Like we haven't seen him. Or Rukmini had not seen him, but just heard of him. And he was praying very sincerely, please fulfill this prediction of Garga, that I will be able to see you. And he meditated upon the qualities that he heard from Garga about Krishna, like we can also do. And by so doing, it's purification. And then he says that proof that you've shown your mercy to me, not only your form has now standing before me, but this hankering for the happiness of being a king, it's gone. I don't have that hankering anymore. Yay! No more material hankering. Now I only... So Krishna said, Muchukunda, you pleased me so much. Take a benediction, whatever you like. He said, no, no, no. Just like Prahlad. No, no, no. Please don't ask me to take a benediction. Because this tendency that I've had for so long for material stuff, I'll just get entangled and become foolish. Please don't ask me. He had already asked him. So then he asked for devotional service. the Lord's association, birth after birth. And Krishna replied, so be it. And I was just testing you. You said that you had become freed. Of course, I know your heart, but I just wanted to see. Just see. This is your quality. You will have my association eternally, birth after birth. And wherever I'm performing my pastimes, you'll be there, in my entourage, in my association. How did that happen? It happened through the association of a devotee. So from the association of devotee flows the mercy of Krishna. How much valuable is the association of devotees? Just like hearing this message from Srimad Bhagavatam by the mercy of our founder Acharya. Here we are. Without that mercy, where would we be? Don't answer the question. Some unfortunate place. But here we are. And so the personality who's being focused upon through so much of this first canto is Maharaj Parikshit. What an important personality to understand and meditate upon. It's not like the purpose of it is to put a stick in our hand and then we can bash the political leaders that don't match the qualifications of Maharaj Parikshit. That's not the purpose. People bashing is not the purpose. Becoming inspired. Because each of us, we may not be a king, nor in this lifetime or future lifetimes is it likely we'll be a king, but we're all in some way or another way, in different ways, demonstrating leadership for others. That's what Vaishnavas are supposed to do. Set the standard for how society should live. When you go to your workplace, you can look at it as, oh, this is awful. And you can look at it, oh, this is a nice opportunity. I can show the people in the workplace, this is what a Vaishnava is. I've got a service here. Among other things, you can meditate like that. And then in your own families and in the community and so forth, there is service that we can do by understanding qualities that are important for someone who's in that position just by default, just by becoming a Vaishnav. You have a very great responsibility and a very great opportunity. So we're going to hear the qualifications of Maharaj Parikshit and celebrate. Maharaj Parikshit is such an exalted devotee, and then by that celebration, contemplating those qualities, see how those qualities can become ours, following the point of the pin and then following that, the shaft of the pin. The character of a leader. In this case, an ideal king. Hare Krishna. It's already, class is over. Should we take some questions or just go downstairs? Huh? Any questions? Quickly. Yes?
Maharaj, it was very nice to understand the free will concept. I want clarification in this. Free will in this, for the ignorant person, this free will is influenced by his karmas as well as is influenced by the, when he comes in contact with purity by mercy. Then how it acts means, which will precede first? His free will is influenced by karmas at the same time.
No, free will is not influenced by karma. Free will influenced by karma is not free will. That's the mind. And free will is of the soul. So, for example, supposing it's your nature, when somebody says something harsh, by karma, you get upset and say something back. That's, you know, karmic tendency, supposing. Now, free will is operative. I can choose not to do that, but then I have to choose something, and what's going to sustain that something is ultimately shelter in Krishna. I can overcome that tendency by shelter in Krishna. That's a free will choice. If I don't make that free will choice, karma is going to act. they'll say something. Or bite my tongue, or say it to somebody else, you know, that person. And that goes on. But there's another option, a free will option. And it's operative. We're not forced to behave according to the impulses of the modes of nature and our previous karma. Now, circumstances may present themselves where someone may speak harshly. That's our karma. Prabhupada's teaching is, don't blame the instrument of your karma. That speaking harshly has to do with something back here where now I'm getting the fruit of my past karma. Whatever the circumstance may be. So the free will choice is to act according to that which is pleasing to Krishna and suitable for the situation in service to Krishna. That's a choice I have. And the support for that choice is the hearing and chanting activity, primarily, and then structuring my life according to what is suitable to my nature. Varna and ashram considered, under the guidance of a qualified teacher, a brahmana who's going to guide me how to do this. So now I have the frame and also the spiritual force and strength to act according to free will rather than reacting to the karmic situation that's been presented to me. And we go further down the path of life and so many things unfold that stellar influences are presenting to us. And we have the free will choice. It's always there. Take shelter of Krishna. Always. And proportionate to our submission unto Krishna, we'll be relieved of the impelling forces. It doesn't mean that you're not going to, you know, get a pain in your knee or someone won't speak harshly to you now or whatever it is. That may happen, but how do you respond to that? That's a free will choice. Okay? And opportunities will also change. Consider, you know, this decision that Vedanta Chaitanya informed me. One congregation member came forward and offered something to do some renovation in the temple. Now, that's a service opportunity that would not have come had he not taken up devotional service. So that's not a karmic event. But, you know, having the opportunity and the responsibility to decide yes or no, and if yes, then how to, and everything else, and how to deal with the person, and all of that is a gift of devotional service. For example. Something else? One more question, and we'll end.
Hare Krishna. So Maharaj, we were yesterday's discussion, sannyasa and tyaga, this comes repeatedly in Bhagavad Gita. Like Arjuna asked multiple times, should I renounce or should I act in devotion? And so many times Krishna explains that, you know, no, you should work for setting example and for knowledge, and we should work. And finally, it all culminates to Sarvadharma Parityaja Mamekam Sharanam Raja, that you leave, you know. And so it, at an immature level, it looks contradictory that, you know, here you'd keep on doing, Varnashrama is explained, and then finally it's...
Speak slower. It seems contradictory that what?
That, like, you know, there is Varnashrama, and then you know, you should do your work, and finally it comes that, okay, leave everything and surrender to me. So is it that verse is only for dry wood, and remaining things are meant to make the wet wood dry wood, or... How do we end?
I'm not sure I understand your question, but I think I understand your question. And if the answer doesn't match your question, please let me know. Bhagavad Gita is spoken by Krishna for all classes of men. There are those that will surrender to Krishna, as Arjuna, and there are those that don't want to surrender to Krishna. And so the indirect processes are there, and he indicates the outcome of those indirect processes. But they're also Vedic. So there's support for the Vedic that's indirect and the advocacy of the direct. So the advice for Arjuna to surrender, abandon all varieties of Dharma and just surrender, where does it end up? He's out on the battlefield. Why? Because it's his quality. He's a Kshatriya. He's engaging his Kshatriya quality in service to Krishna. Not karma sannyas, but karma palatyag, driven by bhakti. And that's the message for us. Now, it's certainly possible for someone to not act that way and just simply hear and chant. That's not most people. And even persons that can hear and chant, like, let's say, Bhaktivinod Thakur or Bhaktisiddhanta, who demonstrated, my goodness, a capacity for hearing and chanting that's otherworldly. Who could do what he did for as many years in a row as he did? I mean, not just one day, for years. So he exhibited, he's beyond Varnashram. And then he situated himself within Varnashram. By taking sannyas, he placed himself within Varnashram and did the duties of a sannyasi out of compassion and setting an example. So, that concluding verse, Sarva Dharmam Paritya Jamamekam Sharanam Braja, needs to be understood very carefully. It's not that Krishna was saying, give up being a Kshatriya. Quite differently, continue your duties as a Kshatriya and in the mood of complete surrender, because that's what Krishna wanted. He wanted the annihilation of the demoniac kings. He could have done it himself. He was giving Arjuna the opportunity so that Arjuna can be glorified. Krishna likes that. So Arjuna did what Krishna likes because he understood that's what's important. And whatever shape that takes, that's what we do. That's the surrender. Like Yudhishthira say, Ashwatthama is dead. That's the topmost dharma. And in other circumstances, it's always tell the truth. Because whatever the will of Krishna is. So how that takes its shape depends upon the person and circumstances and so many things. Okay? I've answered your question. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.